for a week and a half now that they're going to do this, and there's nothing really materializing, and it's just like making me think, is this a lot of nice thought, but nothing will happen?
Yeah.
And it's like,
Marissa, I am rolling again.
Okay.
Should we start over so that the lights...
Just erase it all and start over.
At least we can thank the atmosphere for letting us know early on in the interview.
Yes.
So if you would, please tell me where this issue of refugee resettlement in the Chippewa Valley started for you.
It started for me in October of just this past year, 2023, so a few months ago. I got a call from one of my constituents, and actually it wasn't one. I started to get many, many calls, emails, calls, saying, did you see the TV-18 report? What TV-18 report? No, I haven't seen it. We're going to get refugees in Eau Claire. We're going to have 75 refugees come in. And did you know about this? I said, no, I didn't know about it. Does anybody know about it? And I said, I will find out. Do you have any details? I don't have any details. And so that is when I started to investigate it. And so I talked to the head of World Relief. World Relief is the name of the organization that help settle refugees in the United States. And then I also talked to the state coordinator. We have a state refugee resettlement coordinator for the state of Wisconsin, and talked to them. And what occurred is that in the U.S. Code, and I also looked at the U.S. Code, and I also talked to Congressman Tiffany and Congressman Van Orden. I mean, I went to everybody, and Senator Johnson, and all of them. In the U.S. Code, in 1980, there's a Refugee Resettlement Act. And so refugees can come in, they're under a vetting process. They have to be vetted, and they have to go through quite a large number of steps that can take 7 to 10 years, you know, that they are in whatever country they're in, and before that they are finally approved, if they are approved, to be able to finally arrive in the United States. And then a third party organization like World Relief, and there's Catholic Charities and Lutheran Social Services, there's 10. They have to be certified by the United States government that they are legitimate refugee resettlement organizations. And right now we have 10 of those. World Relief is one of them. And so by the U.S. code, that organization is required to have quarterly meetings and to do contact and coordinate with state and local government before bringing the refugees in. So that is part of the U.S. code. And so when I brought that to World Relief's attention, the head of the World Relief for the office in Eau Claire, and then to the secretary, to the refugee resettlement head here at the state level, they said, well, we did coordinate with government. And I said, well, what governmental official did you coordinate with? Well, with the city manager. And so what the phone calls that I were getting from my constituents, and they were not just a few, I mean, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, which I have had more calls about this than any other issue. People always think the abortion issue is a big, not for the people that have been calling me. The big issue was this one. We just want to know what's going on. We don't feel like, where are they coming from, or what are we even, the big question was, with what's going on with Eau Claire. At that time, we didn't have the HSHS closure. That was October, and that HSHS has just happened a couple weeks ago. But we have a homeless problem in Eau Claire. We have, you know, schools that are struggling. I had a person from the school district, which is right joining Eau Claire, in Altoona, mothers that are calling me that are crying, saying, I don't even feel like my child's getting the attention, and they had a failed referendum last year in Altoona, and so we don't have the money to take care of our own kids and have a classroom space. So how can we take more kids? Because the settlement is not, what the U.S. law says is that they can settle within a 100-mile radius, and so from what I was told by the refugee coordinator, that they were going to stay mainly in Eau Claire, but there's a settlement in Barron, and so they wanted to be able to be settling north and towards Barron up into the Chippewa area. And so the people just want to know, did you contact, you know, the elected officials? Are they in on it? And that's where a step was missed. That's what there was. There wasn't any coordination done with the Eau Claire County Board or with the Chippewa County Board. In fact, they didn't even know that Chippewa County had part of the city of Eau Claire in it. The third-party agency didn't know. So they were coordinating with stakeholders, but they left out the elected officials. And so county sheriffs in Chippewa didn't know in Eau Claire. They didn't have any word. The city council didn't even know. So it was That was the problem, because the people, they used this expression to me over and over, we are having taxation without representation. We want our elected officials to be in on the process so they can say, yes, we have the schools that can handle it. We have, the county is the one who has to pay for all the services for health and human resources, so that if you don't have a job, you need, you know, assistance, if you need medical assistance, all of that is handled by the county. Because the government, the federal government, only pays for 90 days of help to the refugees. Then all that goes away. Then the community has to absorb those costs. And if you come in as a refugee, you have the same status as any other citizen. They're not citizens yet, but you have the same status to be able to access any of the care, you know, whether it's health care, you know, schools, housing, you have the same rights as a citizen. And so that's all these people that are calling me and saying, are we prepared? Do we have the infrastructure in place? And we'd like our city elected officials to be able to evaluate it and say, I had, for instance, the Eau Claire chief, head of the budget committee, he has talked to me so many times, sent me texts, emails, and saying, we don't have the money in Eau Claire County to sustain this. We already have a problem with enough money with DHS, that's the Department of Health Services in Eau Claire, that we are having a very difficult time funding what we have to fund already. We cannot take on an additional burden. I said, well, that is up to the county. And the county has since voted. They took a vote to, you know, to welcome them, which is fine. But that all happened after the fact. It actually just blew up. And so that was a problem.
So World Relief says that, as you said, they did have a lot of conversations with stakeholders. And I mean, since October, November, now we're in February, and so more conversations have happened. And that they have found, by and large, people are very excited for these people, and that overall, 75 people is not that much in the grand scheme of things, when in the Chippewa Valley, there's hundreds of thousands of people. So why are 75 people who, for all intents and purposes, could be 75 people coming from neighboring cities, other cities in Wisconsin, neighboring states, they have kind of the same statuses, they can work. Why is that causing so much consternation?
It is actually, it's not the people coming in, it was just that the public wasn't aware of it. Because 75 people coming in from Minnesota or another state, they're coming here on their own. They have the money to come here on their own. They're moving their families here and they get a job. I mean, they're people like you and I. And so, but these are people that are most likely going to be dependent upon services. And so that, it was just that they weren't notified. It's nothing against the refugee process. It's nothing against people. As you know, the people of Wisconsin, we are loving. I think we're some of the kindest, loving people. We give the shirt off our back to anybody in need. But there's something else about Wisconsinites. We're very practical. I have learned that in running for office and everything. It's just they're very practical. Do you have enough time to do this, Karen? Can you do this job and be a state legislator? No, I don't think you can, so I'm not voting for you, because you can't do all these jobs at once. They're practical. Can we support this? And so they just want the county governments and those that are elected officials to be able to weigh in and say something, instead of just an unelected official making the decision. And because it does affect the community, because they do have to pay for the services that these people will be receiving. So they just wanted to be a part of it. That's all. They just want to be informed and have the government be transparent.
And one thing World Relief told me is that over a span of time, the amount of money that these folks put into the economy and pay in with taxes is significant compared to the services that they receive, like studies have been done. So, you know, is there really a need for concern over a drain of resources if it balances out that they are contributing members to society?
Yeah, and that would be up to the counties to decide, because I don't know Chippewa County's budget, I don't know Eau Claire County's budget, and that would be up for them to decide, do we have the money to fund this until the 10-year mark when they are, you know, contributing back, you know. And so we did look at stats from the State Department, and the Department met with the State Department and the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Health and Human Services from the federal level. Representative Van Orden, Congressman Van Orden, Congressman Tiffany was there, as well as the local representatives. We met with them last Monday, and they showed us how over a long number of years that they could be then actually contributing, which we think is great. We have a wonderful Hmong population in the Chippewa Valley, and they are wonderful people, hardworking, very wonderful people. It's not against a people or a person. It is just, do you have the resources right now? And very well may, but just let the county boards decide that, you know, let them have a say in it, because that's why we elect representatives. I mean, I hope that, you know, you would think that I would know about the problems going on in the state so that I could represent you. And so that's why they elect these county board supervisors, so that they can say, yes, we think it's fine, we're good, everybody. That's all they wanted. And I actually told World Relief that way back in October. I brought it up to the local head of the World Relief, and I said, this is going to blow up. I said, I'm already getting hundreds of phone calls. I said, we can stop this right now. Just go to the Chippewa clerk of the county and just say, I need to schedule a meeting with the county board, and meet with the county board and say, we'd like to bring in some refugees, you know, and just inform you of it. Can we work with you? And go to the Eau Claire County Board and, you know, wherever, whatever counties are going to be affected by this, and just work with them. And they wouldn't. It's like, aren't they stakeholders too? Aren't our elected officials stakeholders also?
Were they refusing to work with them, or they just hadn't had a chance?
Her exact words were, no, I won't. I have to check with headquarters, and I'll get back with you. And I called her back two more times, and she said, we're still checking. And they never did. And finally, because it blew up and was on the news, and they had a protest and all kinds of other things, Chippewa County Board Chairman contacted them and insisted on a meeting, but they never got a hold of them. And so then the meetings were started because of the public outcry. Just have the meeting with our officials. I said, it was so simple. Just include them on the conversation. They're elected officials, they should be included. Because otherwise, because it looks sneaky. That's why everybody says, it looks sneaky. And it's just like, it doesn't have to be sneaky. Just talk to your elected officials, and then everything's out in the open. So then there is no problem. And then I'm telling you, the people of Eau Claire and Chippewa will probably say, that's great, let's help them. Now, I don't know if they'll say that right now. HSHS, they're very upset about HSHS. This is a crisis there, but beforehand. So we just needed to know. And so I will say, I will give credit to World Relief, and to especially to Ms. Martinez, who is the state refugee coordinator. She has been wonderful. Her name is Boyana Martinez. She's been absolutely wonderful. And the refugees were already supposed to be here. They were supposed to come before Christmas, and then they put it off to mid-January. They're still not here. And that reason is that because they realized that some steps had been skipped. And it's not all third-party organizations that skip steps. I just went through a Senate and Assembly hearing because I proposed a bill to say, we just want to make sure you just talk to the elected officials too, make them part of the stakeholders, state and local government, that would be the elected officials, just make them part of the stakeholder when you meet, you know, include them, please. That's all this bill says. And so when we had the hearings on that, we had it yesterday and the day before, then we heard from the different, you know, they're called VOLAGs, they're these voluntary third-party nonprofits, and several of them came, the Catholic Charities and the Lutheran Services, and several of them said, we already do that. That's one of the first people we contact, you know, as we asked, and it was very specific because we also asked the federal employees. There's not a specific delineated, you need to contact this person. It just says state and local government in the U.S. code. So it's up to each one of those VOLAGs to be able to say, okay, these are the check boxes that we go through, that we've contacted each one of these people. And so several of those organizations that testified in committee said, these are the first people we contact, is the mayor. Perfect. That's it. All done. Everybody's happy. That's all we wanted. Just, could you contact the mayor? Could you contact the county board chair? That's all we wanted. That's all this bill wants to do. Just make them part of the stakeholder group. That's all.
One thing that World Relief told me is that this would trigger any state and local government, any board or body within a 100-mile radius to take this up for consideration and then possibly vote on a resolution about it, and that it would be the trigger would be really sensitive, and so it would be an inordinate amount of requirements for school boards that will never interact with one of these families, or communities that will never come into contact with one of these families, and that this 100-mile radius is half the state in some cases. And for the most part, these families settle very close to the center of Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why they don't house them close to where the actual organization is in the city is if they have family nearby. Mm-hmm. So does this bill put undue burden on all of these surrounding communities? You know, there's thousands of local bodies and town boards, village boards, school boards, where they have a lot on their plate already, and this is just too much.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a burden at all. It's actually very minimal. Because they just have to be notified, and if they want to be a part of the discussion, they can send a representative, and if they don't, I serve on the village board in Fall Creek, and so I have been there for several years now, and we are always, you know, okay, who wants to be the point of contact and go to the watershed meeting, or who's going to be a part of, you know, the Lake District meeting, or who's going to be, and we always have to, you know, okay, I'll do that, you know, it's the extracurricular job on the board, and I mean, and then if you're not interested, you know, on a school board, it would be the same. They would say, oh, would you want to attend the meeting? And they'll say, no, we don't think there's any problem, and you don't have to attend. So it would be those interested parties that want to. So the 100-mile radius isn't something set by the state here. That's set by the federal government. So I can't change that, because that's their guidance, is that that the refugees, they limit them. They can't move outside of that 100-mile radius, but they had to put a radius on. That's what the federal government is. I have talked to Congressman Tiffany and Congressman Van Orden and Senator Ron Johnson. I think, would you please look at amending the laws at the state level? Because it would take it all away if they would just put, coordinate with elected state and local elected government officials. Just say elected in there, and then if they want to keep the 100 miles, it's up there. Or just say elected, and then the whole problem is taken care of. But they don't have that language. I don't know if that language has been there for several decades now, but that's a federal problem. I can't change that. So we just want people to be informed. And if they don't want to participate, they don't have to participate. They can say, that's not going to bother me. That's 90 miles over. Okay, we're not going to the meeting. They'll handle it. So
another item is the federal law says they do have to, organizations do have to coordinate with local people and consult, but they do not have to receive permission. Is what you have in your mind the equivalent of permission?
No, not at all. Input. That's all this is. Could we be at the table too? That's all we're asking. Can we be at the table too? That's all this bill is about. So it's just to say, I already said it, input.
Is there a lot of misinformation and confusion around refugee resettlement and the difference between someone who is a refugee who has been waiting in their own country for years to be vetted and approved and then flown into the United States versus someone who is seeking asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border, and they're in a much different legal limbo than someone who is of refugee status.
Yes, I would say there is confusion, and that is why I state in every place I go, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I'll state here unequivocally, there is a huge difference. A refugee is vetted by our government, and it's a very rigorous process they go through that takes years and years for them to finally be approved. That's a refugee. There are two different types of immigrants. There's legal immigrants, and they go through a process too, and we have some wonderful legal immigrants that are, you know, in our country that are doing great work. Then there's the illegal immigrants. Everybody's very aware of that with our southern border and what's going on there. That's the illegal immigrants. And then we have, like, the Afghanis, when they came over, when, you know, when we had the withdrawal from Afghanistan, they're under a completely different situation too. None of the current laws apply with them. Actually, the Secretary of State explained to us that they were under a whole different chapter in the law, and they're completely different. So refugees are the ones that are different, and I'm always making that distinction. These are for refugees, not immigrants, illegal immigrants, because that's really what most people would worry about, is illegal immigrants, because everybody else is legally coming in.
And World Relief made the distinction that even if there were more resources put towards the refugee resettlement process, then there might be relief at the U.S. southern border, U.S.-Mexico southern border, because there are less people who are waiting for a long, long time to go through the vetted refugee resettlement process, and so they can't wait anymore, and so they have to go through the southern border. Would you at all be supportive of expanding the refugee resettlement program, since it does have a more robust system of approving people?
Well, the money really doesn't, the real issue is the number of refugees that can come in. That's set by the United States president. Every year it's set. And so this year it's set at 125,000. And if you go back and look through the years, there's all kinds of different numbers through the years. And so the government is willing to pay the money for whatever it is. It's just, it's the process. When we sat through that briefing with the Secretary of State this just Monday, so just 4 days ago, they went through the vetting process in detail. It's not a money issue. It is just a tremendous amount of information and coordination that has to be made, because they are checking out all their records from their home country, and then they are cross-referencing all kinds of database with the FBI, with the Department of Immigration, it's a huge, incredible process. And so they're doing as many as they can, and it's not a money issue, it's just a matter of the coordination and time. And then as far as the 90 days, that's set in federal law, that's how long they get. And then actually Department of Homeland Security and our Department of Health and Human Services, they will continue with some additional help to the refugees for a full year after they're here, like with language interpreters. So they also are kicking in some funds. So 90 days that the Secretary of State's office that gives the money for housing, you know, for food, for, you know, all the basic needs to get settled. And then there's other help coming for another year, for up to a year.
But I guess in theory, would you be supportive of that number being larger, so that something like Whitewater, where they have a large number of people who are, they're not legal, they're not illegal, they're just in a limbo status, are moving to that area, and the local city and county are struggling to keep up. Would you support expanding refugee resettlement and the numbers of people that come through that program in order to relieve?
I am supportive of people coming to our country as long as they're coming legally. So yes, absolutely. You know, let them come. I mean, we all were refugees at some point, our ancestors. I mean, this country belonged to the First Nation tribes, you know? So, yes, but they have to come in legally. So, and refugees are coming in legally. Everybody should know that. They're coming in legally.
Is there a message that you want to deliver to the refugees that will be coming in to the Eau Claire area?
Yes. We want you to come, and we want you to feel welcome. And all of what we're doing is just making sure that we have the infrastructure to support you and making sure that everyone is at the table so we have a place for your children to go to school and a way that they can communicate, you know, so that, because they will have to have interpreters until they learn the language. And so we want you, we know you've been through hard times, and this is a land of opportunity, and we want you to be able to share in it. And thank you for going through the legal process. Thank you for taking the years that you have taken and all the trouble and all the paperwork and everything that you have done so that you can get to this place.
And then is there something you want the people of the Chippewa Valley to know?
Yes, for the people of Chippewa Valley, I want you to know I am fighting for your voice at the table. That's all that we're looking for, is could we have a seat at the table? That's all. And so your voice needs to be heard too. And I recognize you people, the Chippewa Valley. You love people just like I do. And we want to welcome all those. Give us your poor and your hurting and your sick. And we will help them if we can.
And is there anything else you would like to add on this topic?
I can't think of anything else. Okay. You've done a great job.
If you have just a couple more minutes, if we
sure.
could just talk a little bit about the HSHS topic, so the health sister, wait.
It's the hospital sisters.
Hospital sisters health system.
Yeah.
My mother was a physical therapist there her whole career, but we just always knew it as Sacred Heart.
Yeah.
Tell me what you have learned about the impact of HSHS closing in the Chippewa Valley and the Provea clinics closing.
Yeah. As far as the impact, I consider this to be huge. Not as big as the Maui fires, but certainly bigger than the East Palestine, Ohio train derailment where they had the big chemical spill. It's bigger than that. I see it as bigger than that. I see that people are going to die. And you'll say, well, how can people die? You know, run them to Mayo, run them to Marshfield, take them up to Bloomer, run them over to, down to La Crosse, the city, take them over. But we're going to lose 38% of our emergency care services came through the HSHS services. And so 38%, if you're one of the 38 emergencies, you're having a heart attack now, you need to get to a hospital. You could have been in Chippewa Falls, I'm thinking of St. Joseph's. You could be there in 5 minutes, 10 at the most. You were there. And they're working on you to revive you and to keep you alive. Now we have to drive all the way down to Eau Claire, or are we going to go up to Bloomer? And Bloomer's already overwhelmed. They're getting 8 to 10 more patients per day. And they were already saturated. And they're going, stop. We can't. We don't have a place for them. We don't know what to do. And so this is a major catastrophe for our area. I'm sick about it. I'm just sick about it. So we had 900 mothers give birth to babies just last year at Sacred Heart. We have over 900 mothers that are expecting. So we have to, will the other two health systems in Eau Claire, there's nothing in Chippewa Falls now. That was the only hospital in Chippewa Falls, is St. Joseph's. It's gone. What about all of the, I can't tell you how bad the mental health problem is in our country today and in the state of Wisconsin. It breaks my heart. And we just had Ellie Phillips, the Libretus Center, they do all the detox. Detox is incredibly tricky. You can die during detox. You can't just stop a drug, and just survive. You can die. It is a very specific procedure. They close their doors on Friday. They're gone. They're gone. So places like Arbor Place, that's in Menominee, that take the people after their detox, and other places, where are they going to send them? What are we going to do? And what do we do about the people that, so oftentimes when you're struggling with mental health, you just need somebody to talk to talk you down out of the tree. We all get upset sometimes, and we just need someone to, be a calming voice, and, you don't have to take your life. It's okay. What do we do? I mean, we're going to lose people through suicide, drug overdose, emergency care, that we didn't make it to the hospital in time. It is very, very concerning. It's not even a strong enough word. I'm very, very upset about the whole thing.
What should have been done differently?
They should have contacted us ahead of time. The federal legislators, they called the congressman first because they didn't know either. They got a 2-hour notice. And then they called the state legislators next, the CEO of HSHS. They called us and they gave us an 1.5-hour notice. Could we, you know, and they said, do you have questions? Yes, I have questions. Did you try partnerships? Have you tried affiliations? Did you come to us as the government for possible, you know, help, loans? No, we're done. We're finished with Western Wisconsin. We want to assure you that we're going to stay in Eastern Wisconsin, but we're done. Just like, we're reeling. You know, it takes time to, you know, and there, besides the 1,400 people that are out of a job, I mean, that's grievous enough, but it's the people that won't get the care that is most upsetting. Because when you're hurting, elective surgeries, forget them, they're out the window. You know, you just have to be in dire shape, and then hopefully we can get you somewhere to keep you alive. This is not good.
What do you think should happen going forward?
We have to help in some way. And so my colleagues and I, we are doing everything that we can at this level. And hopefully you will see something come out. But we have to get the governor to work with us. We have to get a legislator behind us. But I want you to know that the state representatives for the Chippewa Valley, we are living, breathing this every moment and trying to come up with something to be able to help.
The governor was up in Eau Claire on Monday.
He was there Monday morning, yes.
What do you think about the statements he made to the public?
I was a little disappointed. We have to help them. And, I mean, one of his statements was that, you know, he wouldn't want to give any money to a private, like Oak Leaf. Oak Leaf is a private, for-profit organization. And I understand that. I want to be able to, any organization that will step up and open an emergency room in Chippewa Falls so that we don't have people dying before they can get someplace, we need to be able to come up with a way, you know, whether you, something, because someone's going to have to step up, or I can't step up. I don't know how to take care of someone's heart attack, and I certainly don't have a facility, but I will do everything I can at the legislative level to make something happen. And I will tell you, we are working behind the scenes here. We can't release anything yet, but I will tell you, we are working. I even had a meeting last night with my colleagues. It's just like, so where are we on this? Have we got this set? What are we going to do? When are we going to make this public? What, you know? We are working.
Is there anything that you can tell people about when relief might be on the horizon?
So much is dependent on if someone will pick up the pieces, you know, like Oak Leaf. You know, I hope that it goes through with Oak Leaf, but I mean, it's been, is it a week and a half now that they've been negotiating and nothing is coming up? And then it's just like someone will have to step up to the bat and, you know, say, sure, I'll manage it. I mean, you have to have a skill set and an administrative, you know, backbone and, you know, organization to be able to run an emergency room and do these care. You can't just, you know, just a person off the street can't say, sure, I think I'll run a hospital. You know, we have to have people there, and I don't know where they are and if, you know, will they step up.
When Marshfield Clinic Hospital opened a number of years ago, there was a lot of concern from the community and particularly people at Sacred Heart about, are we now oversaturated in the market? What is going to happen?
I know.
Do you think that was part of the domino effect here?
I think that it had something to do with it. I think the economy has something to do with it. The workforce has something to do with it. I mean, you know, our economy is blown up. I mean, everybody knows that with inflation. Everything has gone up. Specifically HSHS, when I asked the question, what was it? They did mention that COVID was, they were already losing money before COVID, but COVID just shot them right out the park. I mean, they lost, you know, on HSHS's behalf, I understand. There were huge amounts of money lost, you know. So, and then Marshfield is not, I mean, you might have seen it already in the news. Marshfield is also losing money. They're at a negative 27%, you know. And so Mayo is the only one that is just breaking even. They're not making money. They're just got their head just above water, you know. So the whole industry, the whole healthcare industry is hurting. So that was definitely part of it. COVID is a part of it. The economy is a part of it. The workforce is a part of it. There's so many things that came in. And I do want to say this about HSHS. They have been in the Chippewa Valley for 140 years. They were there when nobody else was there. They have always been there. And they have always taken care of the poor and the hurting. They're, you know, they've done a really good job. I'm sorry to see them go.
What do you think this says about the state of healthcare in rural areas where there's an aging population and there is just a higher and higher need and lower access?
Yeah, that it is a problem that we're facing. I mean, we discuss that in this legislative body all the time. What can we do as far as legislation? I mean, we're passing bills like, okay, to incentivize doctors to go out into rural clinics, you know, we'll pay for your education if you will stay there for a certain number of years. And, you know, in pharmacists, we just passed a pharmacy bill like that. I mean, we're doing everything we can to entice people into the rural area in these healthcare fields and stay there, help us. You know, and we have a terrible problem in the rural areas with EMS services. That's why we have bills to address that too, because the further you get out, the longer it takes to get the ambulance there than to get to back to some place that they can take care of you. I mean, it is, this is a problem that we are looking at every day. We're not ignoring this. Our head is not in the sand. We are doing everything we possibly can to, and I'm open. Anybody, Chippewa Valley, whoever's listening to this, you've got ideas, call me. Call, or your legislator, if I'm not your legislator, not even if I'm not your legislator, call me if you've got some great ideas so that we can say, brilliant, let's make it a law, let's do it, you know. Yeah.
All right, Representative Hurd, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Marissa.
So I will let you know when we get these different components up, but like I said, tomorrow we're speaking with the Office of Rural Health, and then we will air the refugee resettlement